Today on Annenberg Radio News.
And we get to celebrate true love between individuals like we've never been able to do before.
The Supreme Court paves the way for 5 more states to allow same-sex marriage. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Monday, October 6th, 2014. I'm Charlie McGovern. Los Angeles may be on its way to becoming the high-tech capital of the country. L.A. Mayor Eric Garcetti kicked off the first-ever Innovation Week today with a report highlighting the employment and economic contribution of the high-tech sector. Jessica Oliveira tells us what the report found.
Mayor Garcetti started his morning learning about a new software that brings news conferences to a whole new level. He then gave his own press conference announcing the findings of LA Economic Development Corporation Institute, also known as LAEDC. The report shows that Los Angeles employed more high-tech workers last year than any other metro region. While LA is well known for its mastery in entertainment, fashion, and aerospace, it is now the center for technology and innovation.
Los Angeles is not only the most creative spot on the face of the earth, we are the tech leaders in this country. And thanks to the LAEDC Institute for Applied Economics, for the first time we have a comprehensive report proving this to be true.
The report shows LA County's tech sector is home to almost 370,000 workers. That's more than Silicon Valley, more than San Francisco, and more than New York. Mayor Garcetti says the tech industry is now just as important to LA's economy as manufacturing and entertainment.
And if we want to keep it that way, we've got to make sure that our workforce is trained to be those innovators of tomorrow.
High tech makes up 9% of the total workforce in Los Angeles. LA Innovation Week celebrates this leadership in innovation, creativity, and technology. Garcetti says Los Angeles must use this week as a platform to further grow the tech industry. Christine Cooper, vice president of the LAEDC, explains how this new data evolved.
We did a study on the manufacturing industry in Los Angeles and California, actually. And you may know that manufacturing has been on a downward employment trend for quite some time. And so it was one of our thinking that perhaps these kind of jobs that used to be manufacturing industry jobs were now being outsourced. So
this then sparked the LAEDC to begin looking into a broader range of high-tech occupations and businesses. While LA has a long history of innovation, Cooper says it's important to encourage people in LA to stay here and continue pushing creativity.
I think there's a responsibility on all of us to make this a place where people want to be, where they want to innovate and learn and push the frontiers of technology and science.
Los Angeles is getting some of its brain power because it is home to 3 of the top 25 colleges in the nation, and more engineers graduate from Los Angeles than Northern California.
If anybody doubts it, LA is number one in tech. We're going to stay number one in tech.
More than 30 events will be held this week celebrating and highlighting the many institutions behind LA's innovation economy. For more information, visit losangelesinnovationweek.com. Jessica Oliveira, Annenberg Radio News.
Business owners and companies gathered at the Los Angeles Theater today for one common purpose: environmentally friendly technology. The LA Tech Incubator hosted its second annual Glow Show conference, and Camille Requiestas spoke to those who attended.
Water, heat, and garbage, all are materials businesses have in common. These are also materials businesses can use in an environmentally friendly way that is beneficial to their company and the planet.
We have a large problem in terms of trashes.
That's Jason Ha from Incor Technologies, based in Korea.
We can continue to landfill. So we've been developing new technologies for last decades. So there is many different technology how we can recycle anything and everything.
They believe all waste can be recycled and reused for whatever businesses need it for. Businesses like Incor Technologies come to Glosho to present new technology, make connections, and attend workshops focusing on clean technology. Clean technology is considered to be innovative, planet-friendly ways to conserve energy, such as solar panels, purifying waterway systems, and hubs for electrical cars. Fred Walty is the executive director of the Los Angeles Clean Tech Incubator. He says he wants LA to be known for something other than its movie stars.
My vision for this event is to make it the premier clean tech event in the world, and so that people from around the world come here every year and see Los Angeles as a center of clean technology, which it is, but not everybody knows that.
Walty says that helping young companies connect with each other through clean technology will create a green economy for LA and will create new jobs as well. But individual businesses have their own reason for joining the clean tech community. Nextility's business development representative Ryan Mitchell says he entered the energy saving business because he sees a bright future for clean technology.
Right, we need energy. We can't continue to deplete the planet of fossil fuels. It's not sustainable. So I thought to myself personally, well, what am I going to look back 10 years from now and say, that was like Microsoft, I should have got in on that, right? I tried to think of it that way.
Whether the purpose is to connect with other businesses or present new ways to conserve energy and reuse materials, businesses gather together to work towards a more eco-friendly environment.
We're supporting the incubator's mission of being kind of the glue that holds the clean tech community together in Los Angeles. And we think that's really important. It's not just money, it's also about projects, opportunities, demos, publicity, and so on.
Keynote speakers and workshops will continue until tomorrow night. Camille Requiestas, Annenberg Radio News.
A $30,000 reward was announced today for information about the murder of LA County Sheriff's Department security officer. Calvin Gray was shot on July 29th on West 76th Street in Vermont Knolls when he was dropping off his son. Gray's mother was at the news conference and thanked all those helping her find her son's killer.
Would they come in contact with him? Loved him. He was just a great, great little fat kid. Just like I say, if anybody have anything concerning this matter, please go to the authority. I'll appreciate it. We all appreciate the help.
Any information on the suspect should be reported to the LAPD. Freeway crash on I-5 in Irvine this weekend killed 5 teenage passengers. Crashes like this lead many to ask, are teens ready to drive at such a young age? Sarah Zahedi has the story.
The sole survivor of the I-5 car crash was the driver, a 16-year-old boy who was driving without a license. The passengers were 3 other teenage boys and 2 girls from Orange County. They died at the scene of the 2 a.m. crash. Orange County fire officials say the teens were traveling southbound on the 5 from Knott's Scary Farm when they crashed into an embankment and the car caught on fire. California Highway Patrol officers say skid marks on the freeway indicate that speeding may have caused the crash. This accident is not the first of its kind. Traffic crashes are the leading cause of death for teenagers across the United States, and drivers between 16 and 19 have the highest crash rates of any other age group. Jose Polanco has been a driving instructor at Abel's Driving School for 8 years.
They feel bad about the fact that kids get into bad accidents, but then they start driving the same way the people who get into accidents do.
Polanco says many of his teenage students are not equipped to be safe drivers right when they get their licenses.
Some kids are not mature enough to drive, and some kids don't get the help that they need from their parents. We try to tell them as much as possible and teach them good habits and all that, but as soon as they get their licenses, they basically do whatever they want.
In California, drivers younger than 18 are usually prohibited from driving between 11 p.m. and 5 a.m. They also aren't allowed to have passengers under 20 years old in the car for the first 6 months after obtaining a license, unless they are with another licensed driver. But Polanco says that doesn't stop many teens, and that's when the parents come in, to encourage their kids to become safe drivers.
Everybody knows the rules. We tell them, the people at the DMV tell them. But once they get their licenses, it's up to them to follow the rules and do the right thing.
California Highway Patrol officials say further investigation into the crash will take another month. In the meantime, the CHP encourages new drivers to become informed about the ways they can keep themselves and their passengers safe on the road. Sarah Zahedi, Annenberg Radio News.
It's been a bad fire season in California, but now all of the major wildfires in the state appear to be under control. Karina Halajian reports on the King Fire, one of the largest in the state.
The King's Fire near Sacramento has been burning since September 16th. Now firefighters say it is 98% contained and should be fully controlled by Wednesday. Paul Gibbs with the National Cal Fire website encourages homeowners to clear their property.
We always encourage homeowners to do their defensible space, clear around their property, you know, getting rid of any wood piles, pulling them away from the homes, trimming up shrubs and trees and that sort of thing.
12 homes were destroyed and 68 other minor structures were destroyed. During the height of the fire, 2,800 people were evacuated, and currently all residents have been allowed back into their homes. Karina Halajian, Annenberg Radio News.
Thought your breakup with your partner this weekend was a big deal? Hewlett-Packard's plan to split into two equal companies will be the largest corporate breakup Silicon Valley has ever seen. Alana Victor has more.
After 75 years as a unified company, legendary tech empire Hewlett-Packard announced in a news release its plan to split into two companies, one focused on infrastructure and software, and the other on personal systems and printing. Tech analyst Robert Enderle says this shift will be an important move for HP to expand their partnerships.
The two parties are now able to partner with the firms that they otherwise couldn't do anything with, and it's partnering that's providing the leverage in the market.
The companies will be Hewlett-Packard Enterprise and HP Inc. Meg Whitman will continue as CEO and president for HP Enterprise, and also as chairman of HP Inc. Don Weisler, former executive vice president of printing and personal systems, will serve as CEO and president of HP Inc. HP Enterprise will focus on computer servers, data storage gear, software, consulting operations, and other services for corporate technology. HP Inc. will deal with the company's printer and personal computer businesses. Enderle talks about how this split will help partnerships and avoid crossover.
But it allows them to go out and seek partnerships with Samsung and Apple where they couldn't before because, you know, they had products that those guys also made, and it made the partnerships very difficult.
With their increase in potential partnerships, Enderle predicts an improvement on the investment side.
The two parts are clearly worth more separate than they were together.
Each of the companies will be about the same size, with more than $50 billion in annual revenue, according to the Wall Street Journal. Since the rumored split, the company stock is up 6%, according to USA Today. This is neither the first time the company has announced a possible division, nor the only company who is opting to create separate entities to increase their focus. Enderle sees the market shifting from an acquisition phase to a divestiture phase.
So we're going to see some divestitures for a while because acquisitions are too expensive at the moment.
With this possible separation, the future of technology may be seeing increased partnerships between companies that haven't done so before. Alana Victor, Annenberg Radio News.
Safe to say we're more than ready for fall after this weekend, and it looks like we might get some relief from the scorching heat wave. Look for temperatures to peak in the mid-80s throughout the rest of this week. If you're going out in the evening, you'll want to bring a light jacket to stay comfortable at night, as things will cool off to the mid-60s. And not to get our hopes up too much, but there's a 10% chance of rain on Thursday. Later, on Annenberg Radio News, I talked to an activist who believes that the mayor's minimum wage proposal may still not be enough for some workers. Same-sex couples are smiling in several states tonight after an important Supreme Court decision. Rania Aniftas has the story.
Same-sex marriage is now legal in 5 more states after Supreme Court's refusal to get involved in same-sex marriage cases. The Supreme Court announced this morning that it will not review marriage rights cases, leaving the final decision in the hands of the lower courts of appeals. This unexpected decision now allows same-sex couples to marry in Utah, Virginia, Indiana, Oklahoma, and Wisconsin. 6 other states might also be affected because their appeals are still pending, potentially resulting in 30 states allowing gay marriage. Legal and LGBT experts have some ideas as to why the court made this decision today. Rebecca Brown, a constitutional law theorist and professor at USC, says the Supreme Court isn't necessary when a decision on a controversial topic is unanimous.
It could happen later that a different court of appeals could decide to uphold the bans on same-sex marriage. If that happened, the court might, you know, reconsider, because then there would be a split in the circuit. Mm-hmm. But so far they've been unanimous, and so it's less compelling to the court to feel like they have to take the case.
Reverend Kelby Harrison, director of USC's LGBT Resource Center, argues that the decision is a great political strategy to avoid controversy.
It was a way of being able to allow the sort of natural progression of these rights to come to fruition without having to make a verbal statement in either way, which sort of protects them from both sides, the conservative side and the liberal side, from attacking their decision making. So I think it was incredibly smart.
Regardless of the Supreme Court's reasoning, many in the five states affected are thrilled.
This is an enormous step forward toward equality for LGBT Oklahomans. And we get to celebrate true love between individuals like we've never been able to do before.
That was Scott J. Hamilton, the executive director of Cimarron Alliance Equality Center in Oklahoma, who could not be happier about his state's accomplishment of same-sex marriage. However, he says that the LGBT community is not done working yet.
While we are celebrating in Oklahoma, and this is absolutely a tremendous victory, we recognize that we're far from the finish line. We have much, much work left to do because marriage equality is not truly there for everyone across our nation. And until that happens, we'll save some of that celebrating for that day.
As for today, love is in the air for countless same-sex couples who are already out filling their marriage license forms. Rania Niftos, Annenberg Radio News.
California's minimum wage increased from $8 an hour to $9 last July and will go up to $10 in January 2016. But for many in Los Angeles, that simply isn't enough. The Los Angeles Workers Assembly represents minimum wage workers from different industries. They've started a petition to raise California's minimum wage to more than $15 an hour. I asked spokesperson John Parker what the movement is all about.
Okay, the Los Angeles Workers Assembly had our initial meeting at Los Angeles Trade Tech College, and it was a group of organizations that wanted to two things. One is to raise the minimum wage for workers in Los Angeles, and also be in solidarity with the fast food workers and the Walmart workers who are fighting for $15 an hour and union recognition.
What was the genesis of this movement? How did it get going?
Like I said, it started like about last year or so when fast food workers were fighting for $15 in a union, and there are a lot of folks in the community who wanted to help that, and that demand resonated with so many people because of the fact that wages have gone down, declined so drastically in the last 35 years.
What is the process for this?
It's hard. It shouldn't be so hard. I mean, I wish the city would just put this on the ballot. You know, first we got the petition together, and then we got it approved by the city attorney. And now we have 4 months to get 62,000 signatures, which means we really probably need about 100,000 signatures.
What is the petition count, I guess, as of today?
I don't know what the count would be. I mean, if I had to guess, I'd say it was possibly in the thousands. Not sure yet.
Who is opposing this movement, and what is sort of their main counter argument?
You know, we know that the business interests and the politicians who are, you know, sponsored by the corporations and things, we knew that they'd come attacking in different ways. And the latest attack seems to be one of saying that the ballot has no implementation and enforcement, which is totally fabricated. It's clear that these attacks are not based on anything that's in the ballot. They're just desperate attacks to try to sidetrack the momentum.
And John, what is the ideal outcome at the end of all of this?
Well, the ideal outcome would be for it to get on the ballot, because we know once it's on the ballot that everyone's going to vote for it. And once that happens, it immediately takes effect. So immediately over 800,000 workers will get a raise once this takes effect in, I believe it's May. It would be a great shot in the arm for the movement in the whole United States if Los Angeles, some of the biggest cities, gets the highest minimum wage and a wage that is a livable wage.
John, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you.
A Spanish nurse was diagnosed today with the first case of Ebola contracted outside of West Africa. The woman treated a priest with the disease in Madrid last month. She had entered his room once to treat him and again to collect his belongings after his death on September 25th. She began showing symptoms on September 30th and sought treatment. Authorities say she also helped treat another priest with the disease in August, and the Spanish health authorities have placed the 30 workers she came in contact with under observation for 21 days. The National Basketball Association has managed to stay out of the scandal limelight that has surrounded the NFL. They've also managed to make a very handsome profit after making a massive $24 billion television deal. Mara Lindigan has more on the NBA's big payday.
NBA will continue its partnership of many decades with ESPN and Turner Sports. In a news conference this morning, NBA Commissioner Adam Silver announced the league will renew its current contract after it expires in 2 years.
They have been terrific partners, and they each share responsibility for the tremendous growth and popularity of our game.
The contract is worth almost 3 times more than the current deal. That means fans can continue watching the NBA on ABC, ESPN, TNT, NBA TV, and their respective digital platforms. Some of the notable features of the new agreement include televised D-League and Summer League games on ESPN and the extension of WNBA's contract with ESPN through 2025. Dr. Doris Lou Anderson, a professor in the sports management program at Cal State Long Beach, sees no losers in this deal.
So definitely ESPN knows the audience, ESPN/TNT. They know the audience and they know the underserved audience, which means the mobile device. And that's a piece of a pie that NBA is trying to serve.
Mike Prada, the NBA editor for SBNation.com, says the contract prevents the NBA from flirting with rival broadcast companies such as NBC and Fox Sports. ESPN and Turner Sports can continue its monopoly on NBA TV coverage.
Look at the TV numbers. More people are tuning in than ever before. You can thank LeBron for that. You can thank other stars. You can thank a lot of different things. But, you know, just look at the numbers. That's how it's growing.
This deal expects to increase the league's salary cap, making it a great time to be in the NBA. Mara Allen-Dogan, Annenberg Radio News.
And while we're on the topic, the new-look Lakers take the court for the first time tonight in their preseason opener against the Denver Nuggets. Kobe Bryant will make his return from Achilles and knee injuries that sidelined him for most of last season. He'll be joined by newbies Jeremy Lin, Carlos Boozer, and head coach Byron Scott. Ambulante California is a documentary film festival that has traveled to different neighborhoods in L.A. over the past 2 weeks. Ana Gonzalez talked to Christine Davila about bringing films to the community.
Two weeks, 14 films, 13 locations and rogue sites all throughout Los Angeles.
Ambulante was born almost 10 years ago in Mexico, and it was an answer to the question, how can we see all this amazing Mexican nonfiction storytelling and bring it back to the communities. I'm a first generation Mexican American. I'm the director of Ambulante California. And for me, it's really always been important to bridge both of those cultures. Ambulante in the U.S. is now going to start to blossom, to be a replica, in a sense, of how Ambulante works in Mexico. So we're starting off small, we're starting in L.A., we're treating L.A. as if it were its own country, and we have traveled to about 10 different neighborhoods over the past 2 weeks. And the idea is to broaden the reach of documentary, to exhibit documentary in public spaces, and to offer the programming for free.
By the turnout tonight, it's definitely evident, is that documentary film and independent film is alive and well in Los Angeles.
And now it's time to hear the sounds of another place that's uniquely Los Angeles.
This is my second time here, and my boys always like to see trains, but it's a little bit disappointing today because a lot of things get kept off, you know, keep off, so they were not able to go up and down. So it was, it's good, you know, but it's a little bit disappointing for them. And also, there's a lot of shady area, and this is the first time we do a picnic. So, you know, my kids love picnics, so a picnic plus, getting on the train, jumping up and down, is a fabulous day for them.
Our next destination, Santa Barbara. Aboard Sonic City!
The stock market continued its recent downtrend today. The S&P 500, NASDAQ, and the Dow Jones all ended slightly in the red. Investors were spooked by the latest Ebola news, and they also fear that the Federal Reserve is leaning towards raising interest rates in the near future. The most active stock was GT Advanced Technologies, which fell a whopping 92% after announcing it had filed for Chapter 11. The company opened the morning at more than $11 per share and ended the day under a buck. And now we check in with Brad Stryker to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision. Brad, good to have you back in the studio.
All right, it's good to be back, as always. Tonight, we are covering Ebola. We've got another case that's in the U.S., and we will be talking about that. Also, kind of feeding off of this weekend's loss to ASU, we're going to be giving you a great recap and a bunch of different stats with that as well. So that's what you can expect on the show.
Absolutely could not believe the end of that game.
It was rough. It was pretty rough.
Were you there at the stadium?
Oh, yeah. Had to be there. As a Trojan, you got to go out and support, but it was bad.
Yeah, I unfortunately was not at the game. I had to go do another interview, and I nearly drove off the 101.
Oh, yeah.
I had to really get it together.
Oh, it was crazy. I mean, right as up until the moment, we were all excited, but then right when we lost, I mean, you could all tell that everybody was shocked. I mean, everybody was frozen, so it was crazy.
I mean, did you feel good about the Hail Mary when they were going to throw it? Were you like, we got this?
No, not at all. I knew going into it. I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to work, and it was a bummer. So, but we'll see. We'll see what happens next week.
All right, well, Brad, thanks for coming in. Remember, everybody, check out ATVN tonight at 6 o'clock on Trojan Vision. See a German friend, make sure to tell them Guten Tag. Today is National German-American Day, commemorating the date in 1863 when 13 families from the Rhineland settled in Philadelphia. German-American Day died out during World War I because of anti-German sentiment, but was resurrected by President Reagan in 1983. Today there are more than 50 million German-Americans, the largest self-reported ancestry group in the USA. Famous German-Americans include baseball slugger Babe Ruth, President Dwight Eisenhower, and even movie star Leo DiCaprio. Be sure to tune in tomorrow for our story on downtown LA's real estate revival with Roger Vincent of the LA Times, streaming online at annenbergradio.org and on the air at AM 1560 KXSC. And that's it for this Monday. We had help today from Megan Coyle and Alana Victor. Our board operator is Derek Renfro. Sean Birch is the newscast producer, and the executive producer is Andy Vasoyan. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Charlie McGovern.